This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Tuesday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Brooke Beers from Dunellen, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January 24th, episode 1616. This episode is brought to you by Horseware. Good morning, Horse World.
Good Tuesday morning to you, and I do mean a good Tuesday morning.
Well, if you insist on being accurate about it.
You know, only somebody with perfect comedic timing could produce this much energy in one shot.
Your time in the saddle ain't as rough as a life in between, and the fence isn't there for you to straddle, and you can't change horses in the middle of your dream.
Well, good morning, everybody. We're so glad to have you here on Western Day. That's right. The fourth Tuesday of every month is Western Day. And we're welcoming back who she had this vacation over the holidays. She didn't do anything but sit around with her feet up. Brooke Beers, hey, from Horse Holster. How are you, Brooke?
Hi, everybody. I'm doing well.
It's good to have you back again.
Thank you.
And I was sort of joking about you having your feet up because you were busy as heck over at Horse Holster over the holidays.
I was definitely busy. We ran some sales around Christmas, and so it got a little crazy there.
Well, we'll talk more about that and how it's always fun to see a young entrepreneur whose business is actually working.
So far, so good. I'm knocking on table.
We'll talk about that. We have a lot coming up on today's show. We're going to go right to Jennifer to find out
what it is coming up on today's Western Adventure brought to you by Horseware. First up, Kristen from Horse Nation is going to stop by, and she's going to put us all straight on the latest presidentially induced panic regarding the Soaring Act. And then continuing on the misunderstood trail, Ty Evans from Ty Evans Mulesmanship is going to dispel a few mule training myths. Say that three times fast. And then after the break, Tina Mae Weber is going to tell us about the Western Heritage Cattle Drive. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Lots of really cool stuff coming up today, Brooke. I'm looking forward to today's show. You know, we don't talk about mules too often, but have you ever ridden one?
I have not. I don't know too much about them other than that saying stubborn as a mule. So,
which apparently does apply. Yeah, and I think, you know, we've always heard mules, especially from Mary Kitzmiller, talks about mules and how different they are to train, mules and donkeys. And I'm excited to talk to him because it's something we don't chat about too often. And then this cattle drive coming up later, they're going to be 49 days driving cattle.
It's
like one of the longest cattle drives that we've ever heard of. And they're going to talk about, it's a lot of time in the saddle.
That is, you know, the longest time I've been around cattle is that 60 seconds you get when your cattle's sorting.
Imagine 49 days of that 60 seconds.
Yeah, that's totally different. You know, and it's something I've always been interested in trying, but just never had the chance because, you know, you have to be able to go away for that length of time.
You would need a case of monkey butt powder.
I have some of that, by the way.
Be using it every day.
True story. I do have that.
That's funny. Well, there is a lot coming up on today's show. We're going to get to that in just a minute. But first, you haven't been on for a couple of months because of the holidays got in the way there. But you had an opportunity to go recently with your store out to WESA, which is the Western Equestrian Sales Association. It's kind of like ADA, where we'll be this weekend and coming to you live next Monday from ADA that we've done now. This will be our 15th time. So with WESA, it's the same thing, only more Western, right? And larger.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And this was only my second time. I did the show back in September. And then this was the bigger one. So September was a little smaller. And then this was, you know, where there were a lot more stores there, a lot more dealers. And vendor booths, and yeah, there was a lot going on at the show, so it was exciting to meet a lot of different stores, and I'm excited that I did reach out to 20 more stores. So so nearly 100 stores now. Within the next couple weeks, we'll probably be in 100 stores. So very exciting. I'm also outside of the U.S. So we picked up a store in Puerto Rico.
Yay!
Canada, possibly a store in Switzerland. So excited to get it out there in many places as we can.
And of course, we're speaking about the horse holster, and we'll talk more about that. You got some exciting new announcements about the horse holster coming up, too. But one of the things that came up yesterday on the internet, last couple of days, that went crazy on Facebook is, and we talked about this on the show like 2 weeks ago, we talked about the fact that the USDA was looking at actually getting tougher on horse soaring, and I don't think I need to go into what that is anymore. If you don't know what that is, then take a look back at our past episodes with the Tennessee walking horses and all of that. And they were going to finally get tougher on it. We went over that. We had a guest on the show about it, and we talked about it. And then it went all crazy that President Trump hates horses. Pretty much that's what everybody was saying. He hates horses and it's awful what's happening, and he's stopping the soaring thing, regulations from going through. And I just, Horse Nation did an excellent article. Our friend and auditor Kristen did an excellent article trying to defuse the dynamite. And Kristen, good morning. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. So now you tried to put the dynamite back in the box and take the fuse out, because you know that there were Obama haters, there are Trump haters, and everybody wants to blame the president for everything that happens. But tell us exactly what happened and why not to panic yet.
Well, I'm going to preface this by saying, you know, I don't think you have to be a political person to pay attention to this kind of stuff. So when I see a headline like that, you know, first of all, a good journalist, I want to look into it, but also just, you know, as like a decent human being who doesn't want to believe all the clickbait you read on the internet. So, so looking into, you know, some of these headlines that, you know, oh, so-and-so hates horses, what actually has happened is actually a really routine thing that a lot of new administrations will do when they come in. And it makes sense. So what they've done is they've put a temporary hold, on regulations that are going to the National Register. So that means that, you know, anything that was passed but not published yet, or anything that went through in the past 60 days. They just want time to review it, which, you know, from an administrative perspective, for any administrator in any position, makes a lot of sense. So, and you know, something that your predecessor put through, you know, you want to check that out before it goes through under your watch.
Especially if it was another party, if you're a different party. This has always been the case, too. Obama did it. I guarantee you that Clinton did it. They all do it. This is not unusual.
Right. So, you know, I mean, it's totally responsible, but it's easy to look and say, oh my gosh, you know, he did this on purpose to target this one specific regulation. I am assuming, but there are, I'm sure, dozens, if not hundreds,
thousands
of regulations that are all in the same boat. So it's not like he's targeting the soaring people, and he's not, you know, I don't think there's anything like that going on. You know, certainly some people are looking into...
I would put $100 down that he doesn't even know about soaring or anything about this whole thing. You know, it wasn't...
I hate to say it, but yeah. I think it's pretty low on the priority.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, which, you know, of course, people, we don't want to admit that. But, yeah, unfortunately, I don't think worrying about one specific, you know, act in the horse world is going to be too high on... I mean, goodness, you know, I don't want it to be that high. There's plenty of other things that we should be focusing our attention on as... From a government's perspective. So,
and the there will be a new administrator for the USDA, and it, you know, Department of Agriculture, and we don't know what they're going to do yet. So but you did have, you know, some good suggestions in there about contacting your legislators, because, and this is what I said 2 weeks ago when we talked about it, regulation is not the way to go here. a bill that goes through Congress is the way to go. Regulations can be changed at the administration's or the head of the USDA's whim. They can change those anytime. It's just a regulation. They could just make a new regulation that eliminates the previous regulation. That's the reason that this has to be a bill. If there's anybody to be blamed here, it's not Trump, it's not Obama, it's the Congress who has never gotten a bill through. That's where the holdup is Congress.
Correct. You know, so I think as, you know, good educated American citizens, you know, we need to do our due diligence and, you know, contact your lawmakers and, you know, contact the administration and let them know where you stand on it. Because, you know, it's not dead yet. You know, sure, there's always a chance that the new administrator could say, no, we don't want this and not pass that regulation. I don't think that there's reason to panic yet, but, you know, definitely, you know, we all have that right and responsibility as American citizens to speak up for what we believe in. So, you know, certainly I think if people, you know, support, and I do, I support anything that's going to end soaring. You know, that's our job to speak up and make our voices heard. So.
Yeah, let's, you know, again, let's just, as you did here, and thank you for doing that, you looked at all the facts and then just presented the facts. So it's not quite time to panic yet, but it's also not time to stop pushing the legislature, the Senate and the House, to get this bill through so that we can eliminate this problem altogether and not have to worry about a regulation coming up for review every so often. And that's where we've been for the last 20 years with this topic. So, yeah, let's fix the problem. So thank you for that, for keeping a close eye on it. Did you also, while we're at it, and I know I'm throwing this at you out of left field, did you write the Gunrunner story?
I did.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about, I know this is not Western in nature, but I just saw it this morning and I was like, oh, I got to talk to her about that too. So Gunrunner is tell us the story quick.
Yeah, so he is a grade one winning racehorse. He just sort of had the misfortune of, I think, racing in kind of that last year's mixed crop where there weren't really a lot of good standout stars until Airgate came along. I can go to battle with Jamie on this all you want. I still don't like Nyquist. But, you know, I always liked Gunrunner quite a bit, but he just always was sort of second fiddle. So he finally won a grade one start, and he was sort of a tentative hopeful for the Pegasus World Cup that's coming up this weekend. And I'm going to assume that people are familiar with that $12 yep. million dollar purse, richest horse race in the world. So it'd be great, you know, to get a shot at it. But he was stabled at Fairground with Steve Asmussen's barn. And of course, Fairgrounds has been under quarantine with EHV1 for probably about a month.
That's in Louisiana, right? Isn't that Louisiana?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yep, so he's been under the track-wide quarantine. Now, the horse himself has not had any symptoms of EHV1, and that particular barn he's in has been has been clean the whole time. But, of course, the whole facility was under quarantine, so that kind of threw the Pegasus World Cup sort of, you know, into speculation because they didn't think they were going to be able to get the horse out. Excuse me. So they did finally strike a deal at the end of last week that they found a slot for him in the race. If they could get him off the track. The quarantine got lifted on the track on the 21st, and Florida State sent officials from Gulfstream Park, and I think actually the Stronach Group's medical director went out personally to Fairgrounds to try to assist. And he was not real impressed, I guess, with the quarantine set up there. So they said, okay, fine, if you can have a negative blood test for EHV1 as well as a negative nasal swab, excuse me, then you can bring the horse to Gulfstream and he can run. And the owner said, okay, we'll do the blood test, but we're not going to do the nasal swab. So they just, you know, refused to do that. Which, if you read a headline, sounds a little shady.
If you're going to do one, test. Why don't you do the other?
Right. So what it turns out is that if a horse is not presenting with EHV1 symptoms, the nasal swab can return a false positive. The Gunrunner's owner's private vet, he estimated a 15% false positive. I wasn't able to find proof of that figure anywhere. but I guess what happens is that if a horse doesn't have symptoms, there's a good chance that he could still test positive anyway, just because a lot of horses will carry and shed that disease. So if the horse tested positive, then he would need to go to the quarantine barn, which is actually a tent in the parking lot of Fairgrounds right now, which is not really an ideal setup for your, you know, nice racehorse that you want to have.
Your multi-million dollar racehorse.
Exactly. So I credit, you know, both sides of this, actually, in the situation that the owners decided, in the chance that the horse tests positive, this is really not a good way to go for him. And of course, I credit Gulfstream with doing the right thing about trying to get
that would be bad.
Clean horse on the track. Yeah,
that'd be bad if Gunrunner came in and all of a sudden California Chrome and everybody were down, right. You know, down for the count. That'd be bad.
Right. Yeah, that would be a terrible setup. So I credit, you know, both sides with doing the right thing by the horse in the situation. And, you know, it's disappointing all of us who wanted to see Gunrunner run. On the other hand, personally, I don't think anyone's going to catch Chrome or Arrogate. So maybe it's just as well.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good race either way.
And that's coming up, of course, this Saturday, I believe, right? Isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. And it's on TV. It's on NBC, I believe. So you'll be able to watch that on TV, too. And that'll be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it. It's going to be broadcast live at, what, 4:30 or something, I think, on Saturday. It's later in the afternoon, if I remember right. It's usually the last race on the card.
Yeah, I think it's the last race on the card. Yeah.
Well, that's good.
I think
I'm going to
miss it in person, so I hope I can catch a replay later. So,
that's what your recorder's for. Record that sucker.
Yep.
Then also, I needed to ask you real quick, because if everybody remembers right, Kristen started a coffee business with a relative, right, up there in Pennsylvania?
Yes. Yeah, my sister-in-law and I, we bought a coffee company, because I guess that's what you do, you know, when you're bored or something.
When you're young.
The opportunity
came
along.
When you're yuppies. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. Yeah, you know, we're just coffee drinking hipsters up here. So, but yeah, we purchased a coffee roasting company. It was named Dala Hest Coffee Roasters, and the Dala Hest is the Swedish workhorse. It's that little red horse with a saddle that you see probably in IKEA a lot. So our signature blend is the workhorse blend, which is pretty fitting because my sister-in-law also drives our draft horse team quite frequently. So we've just kept everything on that horse theme because that's what horse girls do. So
how's it going?
But yeah, the coffee business is it's just percolating right along. So, that was a good one.
You were waiting to use that one, weren't you?
I was. I screwed that up. I was like, Glenn is going to love this. So we have a lot of direct customers that come to the shop and purchase coffee, and we're working with some local coffee shops as well. So
where is it located in Pennsylvania?
We're actually in Jamestown, New York, so about as far west in New York as you can get before you hit Erie, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
It's right across the border, though, isn't it? Right there?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, we could, you know, take a long hike and walk into Pennsylvania if we wanted to. So, so you can find us, the easiest way to find us is actually to go through our farm website, but probably the easiest way is to go to Facebook and go to Dala Hest Coffee Roasters, and it's spelled D-A-L-A-H-A-S-T.
Dala Hest.
The Swedish, you know, naming it in Swedish was maybe not the wisest move for ease of finding us on Facebook, but hopefully you'll be able to find us.
Well, as you know, we have a lot of listeners in Sweden, so they're all very happy now that they got some love. So there you go.
Excellent.
Well, thank you so much, Kristen.
Swedish bread.
Keep up the good work over there at Horse Nation.
Well, thank you. Have a great day.
Take care. So there you go. That we hope clears up some of the confusion about what's going on with the soaring ban. We'll know more as they weed through the thousands of regulations that they're going to have to weed through. And, you know, the one hope I have is that if the problem is, I don't think Trump and Pence are ever going to see this individual regulation. They're probably never going to hear about it. They're probably never going to see it. But the hope I have is if they do, Pence is a horse person, right? Isn't that what we determined?
That's right, he is.
Yeah. And then Trump, of course, loves horses. He does shows down at his place down there in Wellington and everything. So I'm hoping that if those two hear about it, that we have a chance. So we can keep hoping that. we'll keep hope alive here. There was another one, too, I wanted to bring up that this was an appellate court decision in New Jersey by the Supreme Court of New Jersey. And we had talked about this a long time ago. And I don't know if you guys remember, but there was a 9-year-old that was bit by a horse at a barn. And what happened was the owner or the 9-year-old's mom said, okay, well, I'm going to sue the barn owners because my horse or my son got bit in the arm. So, by the way, the lady's name was Karen Kirkpatrick, and her son was a minor, obviously 9 years old, and they sued Dorothy Nesty and her Hidden View Farm because of her son getting bit by this other horse. And I went, well, I wonder if they were just visiting or what the story was. This is the story. Dorothy Nesty operates Hidden View Farms, described under the website as a private farm in Monroe Township. She rescues horses, and she also has horses boarded there. And what happened in the appellate court decision, it went all the way to the appellate court because this kid got bit, and they were suing to get, you know, damages and all of that stuff. Even though New Jersey has the law that we have here in Florida, where it's, if something happens on a horse farm and it's posted, that's your problem, not the farm owners. So they were claiming that this horse was dangerous and they should have been warned and blah, blah. So here is what happened. And this is what struck me in the story is, and why the story is so important, is that these laws are all over the country in individual states, and this was kind of going to be precedent setting, that these laws don't really hold up, and do they hold up, and that's why this law was so important. But the owner of the farm, the son's mom, Kirkpatrick, met the owner of the farm when they were in high school. They had a mutual interest in horses. They often interacted. Over the course of 25 years, they've known each other. The owner of the farm gave the mom a horse for free in 2012, and donated a horse for free in 2012 because the mom had donated money to the rescue operation. So she gives her a horse. They've had this horse there for years. It was not like it was the first time the boy was there. They've been going there for a long time. When asked on the stand, they actually asked the boy during the deposition, were you ever told about the horses and specifically this horse? And apparently, the owner of the farm had told the boy, you do not run around the horses. Well, we've all, Brooke, been in barns, right, where the kids are there and they're running around and the barn owner says, stop running around the horses.
Yeah.
and little boy's 9 years old. Who knows? He probably was still running around the horses. That's what they do. At least that's one that our barn did. So what the judges came back and said is the miner was bitten by another boarder's horse as he walked by its stall. His mother was nearby in the stable at the time, cleaning out an adjacent stall of her own horse next door. An earlier court trial held that the statute that what's called the NGELA, that's the statute favoring horse owners in New Jersey, immunity applied to the situation, but the defendant appealed and said it did not apply because this was a dangerous horse. The appellate court agreed with the trial court that although the minor did not ride or take care of any of the horses the day he was bitten, his role in accompanying his mother and sister, who were engaged themselves in such equine activities, placed him within the immunity statute's broad definition of a covered participant. So because he was with his family there, the New Jersey regulation covers everybody that was in the family that was there. And it was not his first time. He had been there multiple times. So it's not like the first time the boy was there. It's the first time that apparently the horse had bitten somebody. So this is good news for all of us that live in the states that have this protection, because it sets a precedent, because it went up to the state Supreme Court level. In upholding that decision, the appellate court resolved that the son was a participant within the scope of the law. It adds, this unfortunate event was indeed the result of an inherent proclivities of a horse at times to bite or nip at humans who are within their physical space. Even if we accept at face value the opinions of the plaintiff's expert that the particular horse was known to be aggressive and prone to biting, and stronger warnings may have reduced the risks of harm, her views do not take this event out of the zone of legislative crafted immunity. So what they're basically saying is that, even if she'd put up a sign, this horse bites, it didn't matter. because you're taking a chance when you walk in around any horse. So I don't know. I'm really glad that this one came down. And I'm sorry to get all serious here in the show this morning, Brooke, but it's important for all of us that have horses that have people come out, right?
I hadn't heard of this one, so it's interesting to hear.
Yeah, and it was interesting because it went all the way up. I don't know who provided all the money to everybody to take it this far. Because it had to cost tens of thousands of dollars. And then I had to look at it, and I don't know these people from Adam, but then I had to look at it because I have opinions. And I went, I don't know how much the medical bills were, but these people had a relationship for years. And you got to wonder if there was more to the story than just suing over this, because obviously they don't have a relationship now.
Right.
It just was like, and then I was kind of disappointed in a horse person that would sue because their son, and they know what the risks are. Well, of course, her own horse could have bitten the son.
Exactly.
And you don't know the other side of the story, so it's all speculation. But I was just, and we've been around barns where there's kids running loose. Uh-huh. So, stuff happens. It happens all the time. And I was just so happy that the court sided on what I feel was the right side, which was, to basically say the law applies to people that are at the barn. You take that. That's why, and Brooke, you saw it this morning. We have it on the, before you even drive in our driveway, there's one of those posters. There's a poster in the barn and there's a poster on the ring.
Yep. And all the places that I've boarded always have signs posted, and
It's just how it goes. I mean, and there are some states that don't have these laws, and I feel bad for people in those states because obviously the law worked in New Jersey. So, and it's called the New Jersey Equestrian Liability Act. So let's hope, be glad that didn't go any further than that. Now, you also went out, Brooke, while we're waiting for our first guest here, you went out and had some fun at the NFR, right?
I did. It was my very first time going to Vegas.
Oh, it's your first time in Vegas too?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So how was that?
Well, that was my first time even, going out to that event, and I wanted to see some of it in person, and I got to go to Cowboy Christmas, but to be honest, I had no idea that it was that huge. And so it pretty much takes over Vegas. There's cowboys everywhere, and they have, obviously the 10-day long events going on. I did not get the chance to actually go and see the events happening. I went by myself. I was really only there for a day and a half. So I went around to the vendor booths and did some networking there. And I really just kind of wanted to see what the event was all about. But it's amazing. They really do take over Vegas. And then I did take the opportunity to walk the entire Vegas strip by myself.
Oh, wow.
Which it is long if you're, trying to kind of walk it all in one night. But it was a good experience. And I kind of got to see what that event was all about and learn a little more about it.
Are there still 1,000 people handing out adult flyers on the streets?
Yes.
Yes.
And they're dressed as SpongeBob.
Oh, really? Oh, great. There you go. That's perfect.
I met a lot of interesting characters.
Dressed as SpongeBob. You also got to do a trail ride, you said.
I did. There was a wonderful place. I'll give them a shout out. It's called Cowboy Trail Rides. They were 30 minutes just outside of Vegas, and they offer different types of rides depending on the length of the ride you want to do and how high you want to go. So I did one of their Red Canyon Rim rides, and it was beautiful. The best thing that I've been able to do when I travel and, go to these different trade shows and events is I try and pick a ride to do. So because I'm from Delaware and even living in Florida, we don't have the mountainous views that, the states out west have. So it was beautiful. There was about 8 of us on the trail ride, and I had never done, a ride that
did
had
you have
those
what
views.
Kind of horse did you end up with?
I was on a gelding. Super sweet gelding. Quarter horse, yeah. Yeah. And I know, we're going to be talking to a guest that trains mules, and the horse that led the ride was not a horse. It was a mule. It was a 4-year-old mule that led our entire ride. And she did great. She was still kind of learning, learning everything. But it was a really great experience. So,
and that is beautiful there.
Oh my gosh.
Red Rock Canyon, I mean, there is just, we hiked it when we were out the one time, and it's just
well,
beautiful.
And you do not want your horse to take one wrong step because you're going over. Like a couple of the spots, I was like, oh, like if this horse decides to just steps wrong or trips or whatever, I mean, you're going over the side. So it was fun. It was a really cool experience. So yeah, cowboy trail rides. They have a sunset ride. They have like a little campfire. You can come back. Like if you do that one, you'll come back and they'll have snacks around the campfire. And they had a lot of different things, you know, you can do there. So it was really cool.
Very good. Well, I'm glad you had fun doing that. And I know you did. You went riding also when you were in Denver. I know you went out for a ride there too.
I did. I went to Cowpoke Corner Corral. These are really cool places, you know, that I maybe would have never had the chance to even, you know, learn about and check out. So, yeah, doing these really cool mountains. I could live in the mountains if it wasn't for the extreme cold weather and the snow.
Yeah, see, but the thing about Florida is we don't have, our hills aren't very high. Matter of fact, apparently I went to this farm last night, a very fancy farm for a little open house they had, and 600 acres here in Marion County. And apparently, and I went, and the barn sits up on this hill that must be like 100 feet up. And I said, this is the highest hill I've seen in Florida. And they said, it is the highest hill in Marion County. And I said, they must have built this hill because I don't think it was there naturally. So it was so funny because it was so weird to, you know, to see a hill. But there's a guy that's coming on right now. His name is Ty Evans of Ty Evans Mulemanship. And we're going to get to him right after we hear about Ice Vibe. And we're going to talk a little bit about mules. And he lives in a part of the country where he does have hills a little bigger than 100 feet. So we'll be right back.
In the world of horse racing and elite equestrian sports, it's all about how to prepare and repair. Ice Vibe is a truly portable and highly efficient circulation therapy system for your horse. Before activity, prepare to prevent damage by using the Ice Vibe's vibration pads. Repair after the event by using the unique combination of cold packs and vibration to minimize swelling and encourage blood flow. And because it's battery powered, Ice Vibe is truly portable. The essential and affordable tool to prepare and repair. Ice Vibe.
Well, you can find all of their terrific products at horseware.com. That's horseware.com. Well, coming up now, we have Ty Evans. He won the 2015 and 2016 American Mule Trainers Challenge. We'll talk a little bit about that out of Chester, Utah. Knows a little bit about mules and what, how they're different and how you train them differently than horses. And we don't talk a lot about mules, so I'm glad he's on this morning. Good morning, Ty.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Now, I saw here that you did the American Mule Trainers Challenge. We're the radio network for Road to the Horse. Kind of looks like it's the Road to the Horse for mules.
Yeah, it kind of is. It's kind of based off the same, you know, program, the same outline, and just a little longer ears.
Yeah. Well, you know, and Road to the Horse happens over a three-day period of time. You really end up with about 6 hours to train the horse before you have to do this Tootie's obstacle course at the end, which could be bizarre. I always thought it would take a lot longer to get a mule to the point where you could do anything in a couple days with them.
Well, there's a lot of mystery to these mules, and there's a lot of myths out there. But you can't forget their mother's a horse. You know,
that's
so
true. Yeah,
you know, it's a lot of the same program, and You can get a lot done. Of course, every horse is a little different. Every mule is a little different too. So, depends on the animal, depends on the person.
All right. Well, let's dispel some of those myths today and talk a little bit about mules. So, what is different from a mule to a horse? What are the basic differences when you're teaching your clinics? What do you start with? What are the fundamentals?
But you know, I always joke at my clinics. I tell folks, you know, if I was a real con man and, you know, if I wanted to make a lot of money, I'd write a book about training mules, and then I'd write a book about training horses, and I'd sell it to you. And maybe you'd be buying them both, but you might read the first book and be pretty interested, but then you maybe open up the mule book and you say, well, that guy tricked me. It's the same words. He just changed the pictures out, you know? There's not a lot of difference. You know, if I was to just tell you all the fundamentals that, you know, you'd say, well, shoot, I do that with my horse. It's not a lot of different things, but some of the stuff is between the lines. You know, one big difference, you know, is kind of how you go about things a little different. Sometimes folks that maybe aren't as experienced with a horse or a mule, they can, you know, kind of bully their way into some things, but mules don't really allow that as easily as a horse would. You know,
so rule one is no bullying.
Yeah, no bullying. Okay. No bullying. Yeah, you're not going to get away with that too much with mules. They'll just kind of shut down. They won't take it. You know, the other thing is they process things a little different than horses. You know, horses do so well in the performance world, and mules are starting to make their headway into the performance world as well. But you know, the horse is so reactive, and that's why folks love the horse. You know, and you know, with fast events or fast performance things, you know, the horse operates so quickly. The mule sometimes has to think about these things, make sure it's not making a wrong decision, you know, and make sure it's going to be safe. That's one of the big things that's a little different.
You know, so you start with the fundamentals for training a mule, the same fundamentals as you do training a horse. Does it go at the same speed?
Well,
or is it individual?
It depends. And you know what, a guy I really respect, and maybe I'm sure you know who he is, but Tom Doran.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, he always said that, you know, you have to work with a mule the way you should work with a horse. And you know, that just rings so true to me, because, you know, a lot of folks ask me that, well, do you train a mule the same as you train a horse? And yes, I do, but that doesn't mean that the way you train horses will work with training mules, you know. But, you know, a lot of this this new age, you know, natural horsemanship and things like that, oh, that just fits so perfectly into the mule world. You know, I'm not so sure about the term natural horsemanship, because I don't think there's anything natural about us riding a horse, but you know, that kind of stuff sure works great with these mules.
Hey, by the way, Ty, I'm a carriage driver, and I agree with you totally.
Great.
That's why I do the carriage. Yeah. I don't think there's anything natural about riding a horse. What made you get interested in mules in the first place? What was the spark there? I assume you were into horses first.
You know what? I was really blessed growing up. You know, my family, we had horses, and you know, some of our extended family, you know, are big quarter horse ranchers out here in Utah, and so we grew up around horses for dang sure. But we also had mules. I think my folks got into mules maybe when I was maybe I was 5 or 6, but so I kind of just grew up with them. You know, I was pretty blessed that way, and I never really had any kind of bias one way or another. But what kind of kept me with the mules was the type of riding that I enjoy. You know, here in Utah, everything is either up or down. You know, we're right in the middle of the mountains here, and some rough country, steep country. And the mules kind of intrigued me in that. They're extremely sure-footed. I love how they handle themselves, how they operate through this, you know, through these rough situations. And that's kind of what's kept me with the mule. And you know, and one of the other big things I really like about the mule is, you know, their personality is just a little unique compared to, you know, a horse or a donkey. I just love their the way I've heard it described by a lot of folks, and I guess it kind of applies, is they're a little bit more dog-like, you know, and than maybe a horse, and I enjoy that. You know,
they've got
a nice personality.
Do they tend to attach to one person?
You know what, they go where the leader is, you know, so
okay. It's
the same as a horse, really. The horse is always drawn to that leadership. It's their herd hierarchy, just it makes them that way, you know. And so I found that, you know, if a guy or gal has some stuff going on pretty good with the mule, and they're doing a good job with working with these animals, and they're, you know, they're lined up with them pretty good, then yeah, those mules just love them. And, you know, on the other hand, a lot of folks are kind of tricked into it. They think their mule just loves them so much. They only love them when they have, a treat in their pocket.
That's right. You know? When you're feeding me, I love you.
Yeah. There's a lot of that out there. But, you know, whatever makes you feel loved.
Well, now, because of the terrain out there, this is one thing that I have heard about mules versus horses is a horse will go over that cliff. A mule will never go over a cliff. It will always know to stop before it goes over. So because of that, first, is that true? And then because of, you know, if it is, or do you find that there are a lot more mules out in the terrain that you ride in more so than horses because of that?
Well, it's kind of interesting there, and I hear that a lot too. And then folks, get on my website or they watch our videos or something like that, and they see us playing on these rocks out here and jumping off these rocks and these ledges and things. And so, you know, if you get your mule going pretty good, it'll do what you would like. But I always joke, if I really wanted to die, I'd probably go jump on a horse because it would just jump off the cliff. The mule might run to the edge of the cliff, slam on its brakes, and then I just
throw you over. And you throw you over. He's not going over though. It's so funny. Jennifer just said, are there more horse skeletons at the base of the cliff or mule skeletons? There's probably more people skeletons. Oh,
probably. Yeah, probably people.
That's morbid, Jennifer. So now, when you have somebody coming to you that says, okay, by the way, what do they use to go on the Grand Canyon down that 1-foot path all the way down the Grand Canyon? Not horses. And we had them on because there was all this talk about whether you do that ride or not. And we had the guy on that's been running that concession for, 30 years? And he said, you know, there's never been an accident with the mules going down the Grand Canyon. And he said the one, and you can probably attest to this, Ty, he said the most problems we have when we do groups on those trail rides every day down to the bottom of the Grand Canyon are with horse people because they keep wanting to steer and control the animal. And the ones who are not horse people that just sit there and let the animal do its jobs are the ones that we have the least amount of problems with. So does that sound right to you?
Well, that's probably true. I don't know that they'd want people like us coming down there because we try to, do something with their mules and they just like them to operate.
They just like them to do what the mules have done for 1,000 times up and down that hill. That's right.
Yeah, they probably ask, have you ever ridden before? And if you say yes, I say, all right, you better not come today.
Jamie, my one co-host, goes to the show Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. She did the ride, and she said, by the time I got down to the bottom, I was so tired and so sore and so stiff, and all these non-horse people just got off and were like, nothing happened, and they had never ridden horses before. And she said, I asked the guy, and he said, that's because you weren't just sitting there. You were actually trying to do something. These people just sat there like they were supposed to, didn't try and do anything except enjoy the scenery, you know?
When people
come to you saying they were thinking about buying a mule, what do you tell them? What are the things that you tell them? Like, if I was going to come to you today and say, I want a mule.
The first thing I'd like to find out for sure is you know, what level they're at. And, I'm sure you've heard that old saying, you know, green on green makes black and blue.
We have the song right here if you want me to play it.
that's the first thing I find out is where they're at, what they can handle. There's some folks that, you know, they'd like to work with some young colts and start some mules, and that's really awesome. And then there's other folks that, and that's really the majority of folks is they just want to have a good, safe ride. You know, most of the people that are riding mules, they're not into the performance stuff. You know, they're not, they don't really care how fast they can go or how fast the mule can turn.
You almost raced a mule once?
I did. The group that I used to board with because I lived in Delaware, and where I boarded my horse, there were a couple riders that had mules. They boarded their mules there, mm-hmm. and the one place that we would ride in Fairhill, Maryland is, if you're familiar with it, it's very open fields, you know, and so we would get out in the open, and they're like, come on, let's go, and I'm on my little POA mare, and they had said that their mules were, like, super quick, and we never ended up doing it, but I was always curious, you know, if we went head-to-head, like, how would they be?
You know, some of those mules can run. My wife, Skye, She's won Bishop Mule Days. It's a big mule event out in California every year, and they have races there. And she's won on her mule 3 times. She's been pretty blessed with that. And that's they can sure run, but I haven't seen a mule go as fast as, you know, the horses at the Kentucky Derby or anything. But
I gotta tell you, I gotta change gears here a little bit, and we'll get back to mules, because when I saw that you were Ty and she was Sky, I love couples that get together and their names just perfectly match each other. My wife's Jennifer and I'm Glenn, so everybody calls us Glennifer, and it just kind of works, right? But how did a guy named Ty meet a girl named Sky and end up getting married?
Yeah, it was meant to be. Our names rhymed, so we said, "Oh, we better do it." we were pretty lucky and blessed. We met each other when we were about, I think I was about 13 and she was 12, and our folks were really good friends, and you know, we'd go ride the mules and the horses and go camping and do all that stuff growing up. So we were really good friends growing up, and then got a little older and we saw each other in a little different light. So, kind of went from there.
Figured out what all that was about. But yeah. That's cool, because you
that
don't often
awesome.
Hear about kids, you know, that age, you know, young teenagers that knew each other and then, you know, getting married and staying together.
Stay together.
It usually lasts
you
about a year or two.
Anymore.
And then,
yeah,
so good job. Now, do you have kids? And what are their names? I have to know if they rhyme.
No, they don't rhyme, but yes, I do. We have 2 daughters. Ellie, she's our oldest, she's 4, and then our second daughter is Swayze, and she's gonna turn 2 in a couple days.
Swayze, that's the first time I've ever heard
that
as a first name. Is that Patrick Swayze influence there?
Everybody asked that. We didn't name her after that, but there's actually some really cool country out here in Utah that a family by the name of Swayze settled and stuff like that. I love riding out there. And we just talked about it and there's her name. So.
I love it. I love that.
Yeah,
it's
a cool
name. Yeah.
Does she have a nickname? What's a nickname for Swayze?
Oh, shoot. It depends on how much she's crying, you know. But
are the girls into horses?
Yes, my wife, you know, she might have named her after Patrick.
That's true. Yeah,
I don't know.
I should be asking her. I should be asking Sky that question. So now, are the kids getting into horses and mules? Are they old enough?
Yeah. They both ride all the time. You know, in the winter time, it's been really cold this winter here, so they haven't ridden as much, but. But yeah, you know, when it's a little warmer, they ride about every day, especially Ellie. She's one that's 4. I mean, she's big enough now. She can ride her own mule by herself. She goes on trail rides. And sometimes she sits in these clinics with me. She hangs out for maybe a half hour, 45 minutes, and then she gets bored and goes and plays with her toys. But yeah, they ride quite a lot. And we have some good animals that, you know, we want to make sure we take good care of them and they grow up, you know, wanting to be involved. There's so many kids nowadays that lose interest, and we just want to make sure that we keep their interest as best we can.
Well, now you've ridden all over the place out there, and it's absolutely beautiful country, Colorado, Utah, Wyoming, all of that up there. Where, if, and we always get this question too, when people are traveling there, and we did it last year when we went to Colorado, people are always looking for a place. If you were to pick a place to ride, if you were saying, you know, on your bucket list should be this place to ride, what would that place be?
Oh, Utah. Here in Utah, folks come from everywhere to ride this country, especially southern Utah. There's so many, you know, I don't know how many national parks we have and state parks, and the majority of Utah is public lands. And so there's so many good rides, but a lot of folks love Bryce Canyon here in Utah. A lot of folks come see that, and I really like that. Zion's, which you can't ride in Zion's National Park, but you can ride all around it. And that is just so beautiful down there. You know, as far as scenery, that's one of the top of my list for sure. You know, there's so much country here in Utah. I mean, you could spend a lifetime out here and not see it all.
What's one of the most memorable rides you've ever had?
You know what? All the time, but, there's a, there's a few places in southern Utah that have a lot of Indian artifacts and things like that that we love to go see. And you have to get permits to get into some of that country and see it. But I love that. But outside of Utah, probably one of the best rides I've ever been on that I'd recommend anybody to go is the Tetons of Idaho and Wyoming. That's probably, as far as scenery goes, one of the most beautiful places I think is in the West for sure. Especially the Idaho side. I really like the Idaho side of the Tetons. Cool mountain range. Really cool.
I'm taking note of that.
Yeah, she's writing it down over here.
I'm literally putting that in my phone right now and I'm emailing it to myself. Well, I had Wyoming on my list too.
You gotta go see the Tetons, and you know that country is a lot of that country is a little bit more accessible than a lot of the Utah country too. It gets a little bit more traffic, but it's just so gorgeous up there, and it's you know some of the last frontier up in that country. It's still pretty wild up there. A lot of places that you know I'm sure that. You don't know, nobody's ever stepped. So
now, Now I'm sorry I took you totally off track there. But one of the questions I wanted to ask you, I got two more here that just came in from listeners. One of our listeners that's a driver says, have you ever taught them to drive mules?
Oh.
You know what? Our emphasis is mostly on saddle mules. You know, my wife and I, that's what we focus on is saddle mules. But mules are, for centuries, they've been driving animals. You know, folks have, you know, pulled with them and they've used them to, you know, for crops and, you know, tilling up the land and that kind of thing. But our emphasis, you know, as individuals, we like saddle mules. That's what we're kind of into, you know, but
all right,
yeah,
well,
they make great driving animals.
This is your challenge then, Ty. By the time my wife and I come out to visit you, you have one riding mule for her and get one of them trained up for, in a cart for me. And then okay. I'll do the cooking. I'll do a little cooking out there when we're on the ride because I can carry all the stuff. That's one advantage to driving. Get that done,
yeah,
right?
That's the deal. So, yeah, my wife and I, neither of us are cooks. So we'll take the food anytime.
We always
take food for pay.
It's on my bucket list. It's on my bucket list. Seriously, it is on my bucket list to actually work on a cattle drive sometime. But I want to be in the chuck wagon. I don't want to be riding. I want to help cook in a chuck wagon on a cattle drive. That's on my list. I'm going to get that done. Where can people, if they're interested?
Yeah,
go ahead. Sorry.
I say, well, if you're in the chuck wagon, you'll be the one working the hardest.
That's true.
I want the easy job.
Now, I have one other question from a listener, and then we'll ask you where people can find you if they're looking at getting a mule. And I know that you do train mules and sell mules as well, too. But Denise wanted to know, do you ever deal with donkeys in your clinics?
Oh, yeah. There's usually... you know, and our clinics are obviously mostly focused on mules, and the majority of people will be mules, but just about every clinic we get, two or three horses, and then we get, you know, two or three donkeys, just almost everyone. And, you know, we have a little donkey that my daughter plays around with, and we've had a lot of donkeys over the years. And so, yeah, there a lot of folks come with donkeys.
Very good. And so are they even more stubborn than mules or are donkeys about the same? If you were going to write the third book, okay, so if you're going to write the third book, would it have the same words for donkeys?
it'd be pretty dang close too, you know, okay. And the thing about these donkeys and these mules, you know, they're really no more stubborn than the people that are handling them.
All right, mark that down. We're going to save that clip.
Yeah.
All right. That's very good. Thanks, Ty. Where can people find you guys and where can they get a hold of you if they're actually interested in mule?
Yeah. Our website's probably the best. Our website is tsmules.com. That's T as in Ty, S as in Sky, mules.com. And go on there and you can, you know, our schedule for all of our clinics all over the country and is on there. And, that's where they can find us.
Now, if you live in Florida, you're coming down this way, right? Here in February?
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to be in Florida here in, the
Brooksville?
In, let's see, the middle of February.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Brooksville. Yeah. We got a clinic in Brooksville, Florida coming
That's
up.
Not too far from us, actually.
Yeah.
So, well, I'm glad you're...
Yeah,
you picked,
we're excited to get to the warm weather.
You know, he just prays for clinics in Florida in the winter, doesn't he? Just like, oh, 12 clinics in Florida, please.
Yeah. Yeah, we can't wait.
Sounds good. Well, thank you so much, Ty, for joining us. Say hi to the family for us.
Thanks,
and
Ty.
We look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right, take care.
Have a good day.
Well, you know, I couldn't resist the Ty and Sky thing. I had to go there.
Yeah,
I had to go there. That's very cool. Now it makes me want to go out there. To Utah,
I know.
And Wyoming,
I emailed
Idaho.
That to myself. So,
yeah,
I had some states on my list, and so that just added another one.
Jennifer, are you ready? Are you packing the bags already? Oh, I don't know. We have Jennifer here.
She left without.
Yeah, she left. It. Jennifer, are you with us? There you are. She's back. You packed your bag.
No, I was packing, Glenn. I need to put my jacket in the yeah.
I'm ready. That sounds cool. Very good.
Yeah.
Do you want to ride a mule now, Jennifer? Have you ever ridden a mule?
Oh, sure, I'll ride a mule.
Didn't we own a mule?
Have I ever ridden a mule?
No, your
I
uncle.
Have not.
Your uncle owned mules. Wasn't it?
My uncle did.
Yes, that's what I mean.
But your I never uncle... rode it yet.
No, okay, but he owned mules. I kind of remember that picture of him and a bunch of mules.
Yeah, that picture was taken in like 1918, Glenn.
Yeah, a long time ago.
It kind of makes me want to ride.
Yes, he had a lot of mules.
Yeah, very cool. All right, well, let's take a break for...
I'm going to call again now.
For Horseware, and then also we're going to hear a song from Adrian. We have Boots and Pearls. I did that especially because you're here and you're so classy, Brooke. That's why I did that.
Oh, thanks.
If anybody would see her sitting across from me right now, her hair is about 14 shades of purple and green.
And blue.
Yeah, it's a rainbow of colors. And for some reason, it looks really good on you.
Thanks.
Yeah, I don't think anybody could pull that. Not just anybody could pull that one off.
You know, once you go this extreme, you're fully committed. So I'm glad.
What did the family think
at
Christmas,
okay.
By the way? What did your dad say? Or did he just
They
expect,
liked it. Yeah? Oh, yeah. You're referring to the picture where I shared the peacock. I call it peacock hair.
It is kind of peacockish.
It is, yeah. And so I did these pictures with everybody in my family, including my 9-month-old nephew, and so I kind of put my hair over their head and made everybody have the rainbow hair. They liked it, but now my 9-year-old niece wants it.
Oh,
so,
that's causing problems.
Yeah, my brother's like, great, now she wants purple
You're
hair.
You're the bad auntie. All right, let's take a break.
They say a good rider can hear his horse speak to him. But a great rider can hear his horse whisper. The years he's given me. Nobility without conceit. Friendship without envy. Beauty without vanity. A loyalty without compromise. I borrowed freedom when we rode. The history of mankind and civilization rode with us. His body took the weight of mine and I was carried through. I can still hear that whisper.
And now you can find all of Horseware's blankets at horseware.com. It's not too late, and I know some of you have shredded blankets at this point. You might as well just go on out, get it now. That way it'll last you 2 seasons, or 3 or 4 if you buy a Horseware version. So head over to horseware.com.
Boots, that's what I wear. Pearls seems fair with my blue jeans, diamond rings, and roses in my hair. a bronc. He was tough. The boys all laughed. We drank a lot too young. But you know, we were all just living it up and trying to have fun. County fair, dyed blonde hair, short denim skirt, up to there. The cowboys tipped their hats. The girls all giggle. I pressed the dude.
Was Adrian with Boots and Pearls. You can just look her up on iTunes. Just search for Adrian, A-D-R-I-A-N, and you can find all of her music there. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. It's a special Western episode that we do on the fourth Tuesday of every month. We have Brooke here, and so glad that she's able to join us again. Of course, Brooke is from horseholster.com, and we'll talk more about the exciting colors and things coming out. We're very excited about that. And we also want to thank Horseware for being the title sponsor of our Western episodes. You can find all of their terrific products at horseware.com. Jamie will be back tomorrow here on Horses in the Morning. And then we have some special episodes that we recorded for you. And then we'll be coming live next Monday from ADA, from the American Equestrian Trade Association, highlighting all kinds of new products coming to the market. It's where we met Brooke, actually.
That is, yeah.
Yeah, it's where we met you. So we're looking forward to that. Well, why don't you introduce our next guest? She's ready.
All right. Well, up next, we have Tina Mae Weber. She is a very avid trail rider. She's actually ridden in more than 20 states. So she has had a lot of experience trail riding with her horse, Nugget. And today she's going to come on and she's going to talk more specifically about a very long cattle drive, 49 days to be exact, that is coming up later this year. So Tina, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So I know that you are a very avid trail rider, and I've seen that you've done a lot. And I know we've actually spoken before in the past, but specifically on the show, we wanted
yes.
to... Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, yes, I love your horse holsters.
Well, thank you very much. I know we connected, you know, you had found the product, we connected that way. So I appreciate that. But we really want to talk about the cattle drive that's coming up and your involvement in that. It's always been something that I wanted to do. I've just never been able to get away for that long. But I know this is 49 days. So if you'd let us know the event that's yes. coming up and kind of how you got involved in that.
Well, how I got involved actually is, you know, everybody has that bucket list. And this is just one more on my list to achieve. And I had contacted BJ Stone. She is the trail boss that's putting this all together. And it's like a chance of a lifetime. It is a cattle drive, driving real cattle. 49 days long, whew. And it's approximately 300 miles, give or take.
Wow. It and I did forget to mention it's the Western Heritage Cattle Drive, correct?
Yes, it is the Western Heritage Cattle Drive. And it's really neat. You know, not everybody can muster the full 49 days, and that's fine. People can come if they would like to do this chance of a lifetime. They can come for a day. They can come for a couple days.
Okay, that was my question. Can you drop out?
You know, whatever it is.
If you just can't go any farther.
Yes.
You tap out.
Yes. Yes, you can. Because, you know, sometimes people just, they want to be a part of it, but they really don't want to do the whole thing. Because
right.
although this is very exciting and fun, it's going to be a lot of work.
Right.
That's 7 weeks.
Yes, it is. And we had shortened it. We was going to go through to June, but we have decided to do Texas this year, and then we're going to see how this goes and possibly do Kansas, Oklahoma next year and then Kansas the following year to
okay.
complete it.
Okay, so where
I mean, it's pretty exciting.
Where does it start?
It starts in Salado, Texas at the 3C Cowboy Fellowship Church on March 13th. And then it goes on. We're going to spend about a week there to get, you know, people that the horses are not used to the cattle and things like that to kind of get acclimated, get the staff together, try to get to know each other and kind of put the riders that are going and just kind of get it all organized and get it out. So there's going to be like a kind of a meet and greet and just kind of assessing the situation for that week and getting horses acclimated to everything that's going on around them. And then it goes through to the end of April, April 30th, and it ends at Archer City, Texas, which there's going to be a big hoopla in Archer City. They're going to have, you know, street dances, and they're going to have the bull there, chuck wagon cook-off.
That's you. I'll be there for that.
I need to go. I've always wanted to do the chuck wagon yes. thing. I need to go for that. I like
Yes. You know, I've never been to a chuck wagon cook that didn't have some phenomenal food. It's just always the best.
Now, so are they the same cows? Are you going to start with a certain group of cows, or are we changing cows along the way? These are going to be some tired cows is what I was thinking.
Well, yes, you've got a point there. But we're using the same cattle. Oh. And once, you know, we're traveling anywhere from 10 to 15 miles a day. And most of the majority of the ride is going to be Monday through Friday and then rest for 2 days and then head back out Monday through Friday. Now, there are some Saturdays that we will be riding, but it's 10 to 15 miles a day, which is long when you're driving cattle.
Oh, yeah.
And then you get
it's
to
long when you're sitting
rest
in the saddle, that's for sure. Yeah.
Well, some people are kind of, it's a little different than trail riding because you're literally working it. So it's kind of neat. But I just want to share it out there. We're going to have chuck wagon cooks on the trail. Food will be provided. So, and the cost is, it's $35 per person for rider.
What?
That's
you know,
really?
If they want to think, we want people to participate. This is a chance of a lifetime.
How many riders usually do this type of thing?
Brooke, that is a great question, and it is limited. So if people have to fit this in their schedule, they need to get in, they need to send in their application and get reserved on the dates that they can go, because we are only allowing 50 day riders on each day.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay. So how many riders are riding the whole thing?
We're up to 110 per day.
Wow.
Wow.
That's a lot of riders. How many cows?
Yep. We're going to have, we're going to have around 50 to 100 head. We're actually looking at 100 head, and we're just trying to assess it.
Well, you know what? That should be easy. If you got 100 riders and 100 cows, they each get assigned one cow. Right. There should be no cows getting loose here. They'll be completely surrounded.
it's
a one-to-one ratio. Sorry, I just had to say it.
We have drovers. It's going to be really, I know, that's kind of funny. Some horses can really, you know, the cow thing with some horses, you know, that they're not used to it, it can take some adjustment. We do actually have drovers that are, you know, going to be working with the cows and everything.
They,
and then
for really good at
people
it.
That want to be part of this. Yeah.
The actual
people
cowboys.
That want to be a part of this, we can be behind.
It's like fox hunting. You're going to be in the second field.
Well, it's true. The first time I put a cow in front of Missy, she ran the other way. So you guys would all be going in one direction, and me and Missy will be going the other way.
Do you have people signed up with all different breeds? Do you have some thoroughbreds in there? And so, you know you're going to have quarter horses, but do you have other breeds too?
Well, you know what? Honestly, we haven't asked them what breed of horse they had. So, but I'm sure we have. I mean, you know, even with what we do, there's all kinds of different breeds that can do a good job. So I'm sure that there probably are. I can't really answer that question. I don't know.
Well,
I myself have quarter horses.
The thing I was thinking is if these cows are going 300 miles, you're going to have some lean beef by the time you get there.
Yeah.
That's a bad pun. Sorry. All right.
We're always looking for sponsors too, you know, just to make sure them cows get fed good, and because they got to be fed every night too. I mean, this is something you know, going from one end to the other.
How did you get permission to, you know, you're going through? I assume you're going through a couple different properties here.
Right.
How did you get permission to do this?
Well, they. That is BJ Stone, and she has called the different cities, called ahead to the cities and the places that we are going through in the townships. And that is how she got through, you know, with the permissions and everything, and insurance. You got to have the insurance, and that's why that's really why we have to keep a limit as well. But she's also talked to the Department of Transportation as well. I mean, this is a whole big thing to get this together. You just can't just start it and go, you know, and they have been working on this for over a year. Yes. And I have to put all the credit I just stepped in on this just last month, and I am so excited for this. It's such an exciting event and something that people can participate in, and it doesn't break the budget, but it will be a very neat, opportunity for everybody to be a part of this. But yeah, BJ has been working on this for, like I said, close to a year. They've been on this, and there's a lot of things that you have to go through and a lot of hoops to jump, to put something like this together.
Now, are they required to dress up? Like if Brooke went, would she have to wear a petticoat? Please say yes.
Yes. Like,
she might. Well, actually, this is going to be a filmed documentary. So, yes, you know, we don't want zebra print saddles or anything like that, or brightly colored. We don't want your cell phones out. And I mean, we want this to be as authentic as it possibly can be. And so, therefore, yes, it does matter what you have on.
You're going to look really good in that petticoat, Brooke. You're going to look really nice.
I think
nice.
So,
yeah. I think that would be great. No, I think this is
you
so much fun. Guys, this is so
I
much fun.
I would love to. You know, my question is, okay, so when you get to the end of a day, you know, and you're done and now you're camping out, so how do you find the places you're going to camp out?
Oh, wait a minute. You have to camp. I'm out. There's no hotels along the way.
Kind of take us through like the process of now, you know, it's break time and you're going to camp. And then where do the cattle go when you're kind of stopped?
Well, that's just, Yes, that's just it. Like I said, they have been planning this for a very long time. And so they have reached out to many people along the way. And that's why it's not a straight shot either, because we have to go where we can go with the cattle and horses and wagons and everything else right. like that. And these are not fancy campgrounds, you know. Some of these are just, you know, fields and things. And we want people to come in, and you know, pop up their tent. Mm-hmm. With your bedroll, and you got to be aware, you know, we don't know what the weather's going to be. So, you know, it's not always going to be sunny.
So is that like not always going to have a
That's what I was just thinking. No baths or no showers for about 49 days.
Where do I take a bath?
Who's going to smell worse, the cow, the riders or the cows? Who's going to be worse than that?
Well, do remember we will have a couple breaks, you know, on the weekends.
Oh, good, yeah.
Hopefully there might be a few things in town.
Well, once a week you can take a shower, then that's it. That's all you get. We're making fun of this, but I think it's absolutely, I think it's such a cool thing
it
that you
is.
Guys are doing. I really do. I want to be in the chuck wagon, though. I don't want to be riding. I want to be in the chuck wagon.
Well, and you know what? That can happen. Watch what you say, because that can happen, because each of the wagons, we're allowing for 10 wagons, okay? And each of the wagons are allowed up to 6 people.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, just give me a ring if you want to, you know.
You'll get me on a it's been on my, I mentioned
this. Bring a pillow.
I mentioned this earlier, Tina, that this is on my bucket list. I've always wanted to be on I love to cook, and I've always wanted to be on a chuck wagon.
But does anybody report from the event? So you could.
I could report live.
You could live report, live from.
I'll bring my Old West microphone.
We could do that. Absolutely. Well, how fun would that be?
Well, because it's 49 days, you know.
We'd have a cow mooing in the background.
Now, we're going to have to discuss where I stay at night.
If we stampede, I'll hang up.
We're going to have to discuss the accommodations, though. I'm not sure about the whole tent thing. But we can work on that part. Well, this has been so much fun.
There you go.
Is there still room if one of our listeners wanted to join in?
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, if they have a certain time that they you know, like certain days that they can go, they will need to call in, reserve your spot, and make sure that you get on that list, because we are only allowing 50 day riders on each day. So, you know, Archer City will probably fill up first, because that's the big, 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 big weekend. So if you're even thinking about doing this, and this is the number to call, it's 254-307-1868, or go to the website, which is www.westernheritagecattledrive.com.
WesternHeritageCattleDrive.com. Thank you, Tina. This has been a lot of fun. Your trip.
Thanks, Tina.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.
I might have to call her after and see if I can get over to Texas for a couple days on the chuck wagon.
I know. Reporting live.
Reporting live from the chuck wagon in the middle of Texas. Do you think they're probably better cell phone service than we do here.
I have to agree with that. Yeah. I think everywhere does.
Well, what a fun show talking about mules and riding in Utah and cattle driving in Texas. That would be a blast. Jennifer would probably enjoy that too, although I'm not sure her horse would. What do you think? What do you think Nigel would think about cattle driving in Texas, Jennifer? I'm not sure.
I think that whole getting to know each other part of the drive would be
very important.
Get there a little early, get to know each other.
Jennifer, you're overmodulated just a little bit. So, Brooke, tell us what's going on over there at Horse Holster. You got some new colors coming out?
We do. We just launched our 6 new colors. They're on the website now.
What are they?
Well, they're Blaze Orange.
Of course.
So we've had, and if I get a lot of people asking for one particular color or a few colors, then we'll be sure to get them out there. So we had a lot of people requesting that bright orange color. It also has a reflective strip on it. So it's great for search and rescue and really any outdoor activity if you want to be noticed. And then we have brick red. So more of like that burgundy kind of Ariat red color. And then bright red. We had a lot of people asking
really?
For the reds.
Yeah.
Navy blue and royal blue. And then we also have like a kind of like a milk chocolate brown color.
For the boring people.
Well, we had a lot of people ask, do you have any less bright colors? So a little more earth tone we went
black,
this time.
Too,
we had black, yep.
Yeah.
But we wanted to offer the earth tone colors. And so, and
for brand new listeners, which we have, again, we've had a lot of new listeners coming in here, especially the ones from China, apparently. So now, what is a horse holster? Kind of explain it.
It's everybody. The safest way to carry your cell phone when you're riding your horse. So it's a thigh holster, but it can also be looped through two belt loops and worn by your side. But it's an easy, accessible, convenient, safe way.
And it's water resistant.
It is water resistant neoprene, yes. Yeah. And it fits every size phone.
Even my big phone?
Even your giant tablet that you have. Yep. Yeah. I actually have the 7 Plus with the Outerbox Defender case, which literally
is
like a tablet. And so it is designed to fit everything. And that was the biggest issue, you know, as phones got bigger, everybody was shoving their phone in different places.
Now, are people to buy them for other stuff too, like treats for carrying horse treats?
You can put your horse treats in it. I do have some riders that carry their EpiPens.
Oh, wow. I didn't think about that.
Inhalers, diabetes medicine. It will hold.
Well, yeah, because you really want those protected.
So, right, yeah. Right. So there's been other items that, you know, riders appreciate being able to have attached to them, not their horse.
Because your EpiPen, you come off your horse, you know,
exactly.
And need it, you know. That's
exactly.
True.
So, yeah. And then we've also got a concealed carry version in the works.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We have a lot of people asking for that.
Will that also be a thigh holster?
It will, yeah. Yeah, same thing. I actually just uploaded two new videos to my YouTube channel. One where I show how to put it on, so how to wear it on the thigh versus how to loop it through two belt loops. And then I also describe the difference in the two designs.
Now, are you going to have liability insurance for the people who end up shooting themselves in the leg?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It took me a while to, which that one's still in prototype
phase.
Please
put your safety on before you put the gun.
We are not responsible.
That's probably something you did have to look at, though, right?
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
Oh, I definitely did.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of exciting things. It's almost in 100 stores, so it's...
We met the people. What was their name, Jennifer? We met the people a couple years ago at Ada who had the really nice, beautiful leather purses and handbags and stuff that all had
that concealed carry compartments.
I forget what the name of that company was, but they were made so that you could pull the gun out quickly.
Exactly.
It was kind of a quick release.
Exactly.
System. Yeah.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about. I can't think of the name either.
I can't think of it either. But they were beautiful purses.
Yeah.
I mean, they were just beautiful. Anything you'd see in a store.
Yep.
But they just had the carry concealed permit. I cannot remember. It had a funny name.
Gun-toting mamas.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was gun-toting mamas. That's exactly what it was.
You know what? Nowadays, better safe than sorry.
Where can people find your products?
TheHorseHolster.com.
TheHorseHolster.com is where you can find it now. She's a little busy right now, so it might take a day or two.
We're getting a little crazy at the moment. But...
And thank you to all the listeners who bought them over Christmas. I
thank
know a bunch
you guys.
Of the listeners
yes.
did.
Yeah, we did. And the two, I spoke to the two riders that won them on your radiothon at the holidays. So they were happy. And yeah.
I think one of them posted pictures.
I think so.
Them. Yeah. After the auditors, after they got them.
So it's been great. Thank you, everybody, for the support.
Well, I'm so glad you're succeeding.
Thanks.
Now, you're going to be leaving us.
I am leaving Florida. I know. And
who does this? Who leaves in the middle of winter?
I know. You know, it probably won't be until, March-ish. But to be honest, so I'm from Delaware, and I'm actually making the decision to go back home because that's where my family is. That's where all of my friends are. And so I'm kind of at the stage where I need to figure out the next step for my growth in the business. And so I'm making the decision
to
do that.
So you're looking for free family labor? That's why you're moving home.
I didn't say that.
Sorry, Mom.
So I will be moving back to that area soon. And
she's blushing now because I hit close to home with that one. Literally. There's another bad pun, actually.
You're full of them today.
I am full of bad puns today. Well, I am so happy for you. We're so excited. And thank you so much for joining us over the last several months and being here with us. And I know your business is growing to the point where you're not going to be able to do this anymore. But you will come back, right?
I will.
Okay. Come back and visit anyway. But we really do appreciate you joining
thank
us.
Thank you. I've appreciated it so much. So thank you.
And we will continue doing the Western episodes the fourth Thursday of every month. But we're going to need a new co-host. For that. And I'm very sad about that because we've really enjoyed working with Brooke. And Brooke will tell you that I spent the first half an hour before the show today trying to talk her into doing it remotely. But her business is to the point where she needs to pay attention to it. And that's good.
Yeah, yeah, it's very good.
It's all good stuff. Well, thank you very much
for doing
this.
Thank you, guys.
You've been terrific.
Thanks.
Well, that's it for today. We'll be back again tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern with another terrific show for you. Jamie will be back. We have some guests lined up, so we'll be having some fun tomorrow. Tomorrow, I think we're talking about packing out using mules and donkeys.
Oh,
and things.
Nice.
So we're going to be talking about packing, which is something that if you're a serious trail rider, you eventually look at doing. I will not, because that still involves camping in the woods. But No showers. I'm glad you asked that one before I did.
You know, I think when we looked at each other, we both were like, wait a minute.
I know. It's like, I'm one of those two-a-day people sometimes. And yeah. I wouldn't do so well. But I might take a look at that Texas thing. We're going to have to see how their schedule lines up with all the trips we have planned. But that would be fun, reporting, doing a show from the chuck wagon.
Heck
sitting
yeah.
Sitting there, hearing the horses and the cows.
You know what else they're doing out in Texas? They do a mounted archery. I always love to talk about the mounted archery. They are doing a competition out there.
Do they have any mounted archery in Delaware?
At Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So the group that I had started to ride with before I moved down to Florida was the Chile Warriors Mounted Archery Group. And they're like Newtown Square, Pennsylvania area. And so they were formed a year and a half ago and have done
like
smaller
competitions. That's not too far from where you'll be then.
No. So I'll definitely get, you know, connected with that group up there again and hopefully get some riding in. But as far as actual like competitions, Texas and Georgia are the two states that do them. So.
Well, everybody, be sure to update your app, your Horse Radio Network apps. If you have the mobile app, either iOS or Android, and have not done the update, please do that. We have the two new shows on, the World Equestrian Games radio show, which is getting a good response so far, and we'll be doing another one of those on the 30th come out. That's twice a month. And also the podcast, which is now a weekly show about the Hunter Jumper world. So you can find that on the app as well. Check it all out. Download it. It's free, and it's easy to use. That's it, everybody. See you tomorrow.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.